ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, October 29th, 2018. This is the last Canadian review of 2018. For the first time since 2011, no Canadian teams will be in the playoffs.
And yeah, that was a long, long time ago. TFC was barely an MLS team in 2011, and the Impact weren't. So yes, yep. It was a little bit different back then. I did the odds yesterday. I used, compound probability is not a perfect science in terms of what it actually means, but I put it at about 150,000 to one that this would happen based on the, 48% of teams don't make the playoffs in MLS right now. So yeah, it's pretty difficult for all three to miss, but, they did.
They
so
did.
Here we are.
What an achievement. What an accomplishment. From very bad odds, they did it. They missed the playoffs.
The TFC nightmare is what we'll call this. And the league had a nightmare too with the Houston Dynamo.
My lord! Good job, Manotas and Quito, eliminating Zlatan. Well, Dwayne, if you lose to the Dynamo in the most important game of your season, you clearly don't deserve to be in the playoffs, anyways.
Yeah, this is the Canadian review, but real quickly, I did end up watching that one after on a replay, just the second half, just to see what it was. It illustrates everything wrong with the LA Galaxy, that game does. They have some high-end stuff, and they got the goals, but when the push came to shove, they had nothing back. They had no midfield presence. They had no ability to defend, and it was just a complete collapse. That's a team that has to be stripped down to the bones, I think, and rebuilt, because this is not MLS 2.0 anymore.
No.
And speaking of what's... Sorry, go ahead, Gavin.
I was going to say, it's the second year in a row that we feel this way for the Galaxy. We called it at the beginning of the season. We said, Siggy Schmidt, we're not sure it's going to be worth it. And last year, we said the same thing for Curt Arnolfo. We're like, yeah, this is not going to go well. But for once, Dwayne, one of my predictions came true. I said SKC would win the West, and SKC won the West.
They did win the West, and I said the Orlando Lions would finish last in the East, and they finished last in the East. So there you go. I actually had an Orlando fan talking to me on Twitter, and I thought immediately he was ripping into me because he reposted my predictions, and I looked at them and went, oh, wow. I mean, first off, I had TFC winning in trouble again, which, that didn't happen. But
that tweet didn't age well.
Well, but he was like focused on Orlando, and and he was actually one of the more rational Orlando fans I've ever interacted with, because I said, I explained myself again, which I have many times, is that my belief against Orlando isn't against the players per se. It's I don't think the environment is set up for them to be successful in based on something rotten at the top. And until that gets fixed, that team, I think, is going to continue to flounder. But enough of my old predictions, Kevin.
Poor Sasha Kleshton, who plays against his former team, and his former team wins one. Nothing, wins the shield right in front of him. You see him there just crying on the field, like, what could have been?
It's the Red Bulls' third shield again. I mean, we'll do our playoff preview tomorrow. I'm not ready to make an exact choice yet, but certainly the Red Bulls are in my consideration for MLS Cup contenders to win. They have to be. They're the shield winners, so you have to consider them. Yeah. And despite their history, for sure. And when we do this preview tomorrow.
And they beat a Toronto record of 69 points of last year. People were saying, this record's going to stand for a long, long time. Turns out, it stood for the least amount of possible time.
Yeah, it's a strange one when you get into the... I don't put a lot of stock in the points record. I think I was pretty clear on that in the lead-up into it. It's a bit arbitrary because it depends on a lot of different circumstances. But I think that when you look at the league this year and you look at the bottom half versus the top half, the disparity, that I'm not dismissing what the Red Bulls did. There's a lot more free points this year, I think.
Three games against Orlando. Three games against Chicago. Three games against, I guess, Montreal. But anyways, let's talk about this Montreal game for a quick second. 1-0, New England Revolution versus the Montreal Impact. Montreal Impact did not look like they were ready to score a goal yesterday. And I think it's really the season in a nutshell for the Impact. The lack of goals coming from the striker position. The lack of goals coming from someone not named Piatti or Silva. The lack of consistency in the offense. That famous one goal every two games that you can count on from a productive striker. And you can build around with the supporting cast of goals here and there. You have a few players with 4, 5, 6 goals. With one striker, 10 to 15 goals. You're talking about a team who scores almost one goal a game. This was not the case this year for the Impact. And as much as we want to say, oh, they missed their opportunity yesterday, they could have made the playoffs, or they lost 5-0 to DC, could have been that one. 3-11, that's the record of the Montreal Impact from March 4th to June 2nd. 3 wins, 11 defeats. This is insanely bad record to begin the year. You just add one more win in this record at the beginning of the season, Dwayne, and you see Montreal's over Columbus. And that's where they lost the season. That's where they lost their playoff chances, is from March to June. Because from June on, they're the fifth best team in the league. If you just disregard the beginning of the season, which you cannot do, but they were the fifth best team in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, no, and that isn't a remarkable statistic to look at. And it's got to bode well for the Impact moving forward into 2019. But as you say, the season wasn't lost yesterday. The season was lost maybe even in last offseason when, you know, they had to have a complete reevaluation after Biello was let go. They had to find the coach. There wasn't enough time properly, I think, to prepare for the season. There was a learning curve situation that happened at the beginning of the year until the new management figured themselves out a little bit. And once they did, they started to go smoothly.
Yeah, exactly. They did figure the league. Remy Gard is the only coach chosen 4 times as Coach of the Week. In the Players of the Week, there's always a coach nominated there at the same time. And Remy Gard is the coach in the entire league that has 4. And those 4 came from June to now. So that's something. His adaptation of the league did take some time, like it always does. But what was impressive to me is that progression curve. Once they learned how to play together, they adjusted. But Remy Gard did not use his bench the entire season. Outside of a few places here and there, he did not have more than 11 players that he had trust in, that he was confident could come in and actually influence a game. Like, he put Mathieu Chouinard out there many, many times this year because he works hard, because he believes in his high ceiling and his talent, but also because, well, Anthony Jackson-Amel was not present, not practicing the way he wanted it, not finishing the way he wants it. Mathieu Mancosu has been MIA for a long time now, and he was not confident in the abilities of his bench to come in and influence a game. And if you want to have a successful season, you need one or two players off the bench that you can call upon, and they come into the game and actually score a goal from time to time, actually bring some speed, bring something. The Impact had like 12 players they trusted the entire season. Dwayne?
Sorry, I lost you there for a second, Kevin. Can you hear me now okay?
Yeah, we could always hear you. I was saying that Montreal only have 11 to 12 players that they could really trust the entire season. And Miguel did not have options off the bench to make him feel confident enough to put him into the game and to see the game change and influence the results of the game. And you need one or two players off the bench to be goal scorers, changing the pace, to bring something to the game, which the Impact did not have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I was about to make an Anthony Jackson-Hamel, you know, Forge FC joke there when my power cut off because it was too easy or something. But yeah, absolutely. I think that what you're going to see in the offseason for Montreal is, you know, that those channels, I think, to Ligue 1 or Ligue 2, I guess, maybe probably Ligue 1 will open up a little bit more. And you'll see, I think, a makeover of that bench because you just can't go through an MLS season and expect to be a champion at the end of it if you don't have, you know, that 12 through 18, particularly, if not 12 through 24, in the way that you want them to be. And the Impact just weren't there yet. They played well in their start. They have a game-breaker in Piatti, which a lot of teams would kill for, but that's not enough. You can't do it on one player alone. I mean, in many ways, that's the Galaxy model by accident, right?
Yeah. And the waste of money for the Impact. Well, we'll get into the details. We have a little 5 questions we're going to answer for all Canadian teams. So maybe we should start with Montreal because we're there right now. The first one, Dwayne, what was the question you asked me by text? Like, what's the high point of the Montreal Impact season? I have two games that are close in the timing of them, of each other. The 4-1 win in Philly, going one goal down, then scoring four on the road and overtaking Philly or a playoff position at that moment. That was a high point. And that 3-0 victory at home versus the Red Bulls. Yes, the Red Bulls played five games in 15 days or something like that. But still, the Impact were able to put a marker down at Stade Saputo and were able to show their potential. And I think those two games at the end of the season, that's what the high point will be looked at. You'll look at the roster of these games. Okay, we might not have all the same defenders and strikers coming back, but the midfield is our biggest strength right now. We need to continue with the same midfield going forward, and those two games are a result of that. So now, moving to the second question, Dwayne, about the Montreal Impact. What's a low point of the Montreal Impact? For me, it's from March to June. It's like a low point. That's like a long stretch. It's that 3-11 span. From March 4th to June 2nd, the Impact won 3 games, lost 11 games, no draws. Imagine if a few of those losses were draws. Well, we're talking about a different situation at the end of the season. It's a few points that you actually get, but they didn't, and that's a low point for me.
Yeah, well, that's still Carl Robinson's, line of the year, fine lines, right? This was a fine line season for the Impact at the start of the year, and more than the Whitecaps in any way. We'll get to them in a minute. Don't worry. But from an outside perspective, I would think maybe losing to Vancouver in the Voyageurs Cup might not have been the most pleasing thing to do either, because it certainly was a competition that I think that you might have been able to believe, particularly based on TFC's form at that time, that they had a chance in. But certainly it's hard to argue with just the generic overall start of the season as being quite the low point. Yeah. You did mention my sound cut out again just briefly, unfortunately, but in terms of the high point, I would absolutely agree that the 3-0 win over Red Bulls would have been what I would have selected there as well, simply because I remember how jarring it was at the time. It was something that we kind of just went, whoa, like that's... Yeah. What's going on here? Maybe this team is something that we should be paying more attention to.
And the way they did it too, they were behind the eight ball, we should say, in the first 25 to 30 minutes, just letting the Red Bulls run. Okay, they're tired now. Let's go. Counter, score. Counter, mm-hmm. score. And that's the MO of the Impact since 2012 in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, no, it has been for sure. A lot of derbies between TFC and Montreal have been, terrifying watching the Impact. I remember back even that Eastern Conference final was a lot about the ability of the Impact to strike TFC in the break, if you think of it, when the Impact were on the front foot in that matchup. And it certainly has been their MO. And it's sometimes you don't want to completely change over the DNA of a team. And maybe that was part of the problem in the early season, having to remember who they were and play to the pieces that you have. Like if you have a full offseason, maybe you can slowly start to change it. But I would be looking to continue to take advantage of that moving forward.
Now, the third question you asked myself, and we're going to answer for Vancouver and Toronto as well, is the MVP of the season. I've been thinking long and hard, and there's three players that I cannot disassociate. There's three players that are, for me, have brought equally to this team in 2018 and brought probably a few points more than the team deserved around the second half of the season, especially. Evan Bush, for me, has been the best goalkeeper in Major League Soccer, over 133 saves, if you add yesterday's saves in this equation. That's a lot of saves in a season. This is due a lot to the amount of shots they were conceded at the beginning of the season. But Evan Bush has been rejuvenated under Joel Batts. A rejuvenated confidence, a rejuvenated tactical awareness where he's at the right place at the right time. Doesn't have to do those amazing diving saves. No, he's just there when he needs to be. And he's there to box shots that sometimes they would have flubbed over the last few years. Evan Bush has been lights out. Nacho Piatti, of course, has been lights out, as always, for the Montreal Impact. But you cannot carry a team by yourself. And this was the feeling I got late in the season. Well, Piatti looked tired. Piatti looked like he's carrying this team for too long and the back is starting to give away. But for me, the player that will be the captain of the Montreal Impact if things are right in this world starting next year is Samuel Piette, the only player to play almost every single minute. He played over 3,000 minutes, only 80 minutes of the entire season he didn't play, and that's because he was injured slash really tired. They took him off games, but he started most games. Played an amazing role for a guy from this part of town. Was one of the most key pieces in the midfield for Montreal. How he steps up to defend to attackers, blocks and intercepts amazingly, passes and shot attempts, and how he's always there to reassure and to help the back line as a sweeper defensive midfielder. Samuel Piette is one of the best defensive midfielder in Major League Soccer this year. And the more I think about it, out of the three, the two that really save Montreal often were Evan Bush and Samuel Piette. And I have to say, Samuel Piette, for a very old 24-year-old, is so impressive.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to lie. When Piette came into the league, I wasn't entirely convinced that he would have the impact that he's had. Forgive the pun. It's hard to avoid when you're talking about Montreal.
I wasn't
entirely sure. Just not because I just didn't trust his talent level, because obviously anyone that gets any look in Spain has some technical abilities that are to be envied. But he just didn't play a lot at a high level in Spain. So I didn't know if he'd be able to adjust quickly. But he certainly has. And that workhorse situation is absolutely. And you know, when you're talking about MVP, which I called it MVP, not best player. I mean, if it's best player, it's Piatti. It is. But MVP is a different question altogether. And yeah, it's a good shout that way too. But Bush, you see closer, so I'm going to take your judgment on that. Then a keepers are a hard one. You never really want the keeper to be your MVP either. You kind of want your keeper to be anonymous.
Yeah, that's true. Because if you allow too many shots and too many dangerous shots, your keeper has to make saves. And you kind of want your keeper to make a save a game. That's it. And it means that you have brunt of the possession, at least brunt of the possession where it counts on the field, and you're stopping shots before they get to him. But in worst case scenario, your keeper needs to be there. That's why Evan Bush was important for the impact.
Fair enough. All right. So the next question I had was least valuable player, which is kind of mean. But
can I choose a position? Can I choose like a position as a whole?
Strikers.
Well, sure.
No. Jackson Amel and Mancosu, both equally, and probably Jackson Amel even more. He barely could get on the field this year. We don't know behind the scenes what happens. We don't know how much of it is on his part, on his relationship with Rémi Garde, or how much of it is with his lack of devotion in training, his lack of maybe willing to show again what he's worth to somebody else is new when it's been few years where he's trying to show and he gets a few playing time and then he doesn't anymore. Mancosu is just terrible season for Mancosu, missing open goals, missing chances since the beginning of the season. His rope was long and he hanged himself with that rope a few times over, then lost his job to Amerikwa. And Amerikwa did a few things right, but not the goals that we expect from a striker position. But this goes more to Anthony Jackson-Amel and to Matteo Mancosu, the two least valuable players, especially Mancosu when you look at his salary in the $800,000 mark with some TAM money and GAM money on him, so he's under the DP threshold. But man, Mancosu, what a waste of money this year.
Yeah, well, and he lost his job to a journeyman, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good journeyman, but a journeyman nonetheless.
Yeah, a lifer, right? So valuable player, but he's a valuable player as your third striker, you know? And that's not what you want to lose a player that's making $800,000. When you're talking about AJH, though, you know, if we had an overall most disappointing player of the season or most disappointing situation this season, particularly when you do a global sort of looking at Canadian soccer as a whole, he's right up there because so much promise last year and then it just went away. And I wonder, you know, you mentioned a lot about the training and sort of him not getting looks and maybe them not believing in what he's doing. And it could just be a bad fit. That's possible as well. And
hope
that's
but,
the case.
You know, even if it's a bad fit, if you score a bunch of goals in training all the time, the coach is going to give you a certain look. And once you get your opportunity, you cannot miss it. It's a type of situation that, you know, example, if it's the case, we don't know. But example, if Rémi Gall does not believe in AGH, in his technical abilities, and is staying power as the key guy for your team as a striker, if you get your opportunity, you need to score a couple. And if you're given 2-3 games in a row, you cannot show a lack of effort. You have to show that you actually more effort that you can output, so that you show the coach that it's me, coach. It's my position. You have to. Someone's gonna have to outplay me to get it. And he never showed that. He maybe wasn't given the opportunity long enough, but he never showed anything to Rémy Garde outside games that he can be that guy. So it's the chicken and the egg conversation. And you know, as an athlete, sometimes it's all about the small opportunity you're given, and you have to perform right then and there. Otherwise, it's gone.
There's a belief in Canadian soccer, like amongst technical people in Canadian soccer, that players that play were very talented as youngsters, for lack of a better way to put it, as young Canadian players, sometimes get lazy because they've never been pushed in the Canadian system. And that's simply to do with the lack of depth of the Canadian system. So if you're a guy, and I don't know if this is the case, but if you're a guy like Anthony Jackson-Hell or Jordan Hamilton, if you want to move to Toronto for perspective, to not, you know, completely beat up on one player, they still get pushed and then they suddenly fall by the wayside when they have to compete against hungry journeymen that need to eat and need to feed their family, right? And maybe for a guy like Anthony Jackson-Hamel, maybe jokes aside, maybe a move to Hamilton or to a USL team or to somewhere where he has to fight like hell to feed himself might help him ultimately, because he's comfortable in Montreal, clearly, right? And maybe not as comfortable now than he was a year ago. But maybe that's what he needs for the next step in his development. And there's players that never get past that. There's players littered all over the world. It's not just a Canadian thing, that are brilliant as under-20s.
Tommy Thompson.
Have flashes, and then they never evaluate. They never move forward from that because they just were never pushed when they were younger. And maybe that's the case. We hope not, but maybe that is. And then there's some evidence that it might be.
Yep, two American examples that could be similar. Jack McInerney and Tommy Thompson.
There
kind
you
of
go.
A similar deal. Now, the last question about Montreal, and we'll quickly move to Vancouver and Toronto. The biggest need in the offseason, strikers. You need strikers. You need decent strikers that are consistent. And the back line needs to be looked at. Rod Fanny's contract is done. If Montreal would have qualified for his playoff, his option for next year would have been picked up automatically. Now that they haven't qualified for the playoff, Rod Fanny is in this free agent. Bakary Sagna's contract is now over as well. So you have Camacho, Raitala, Lovitz as your backline for next year. I'm confident about two of those three. Camacho, I'm not sold 100%, but Lovitz for me is one of the best left back in the entire league, especially with what he's shown the last 2 years. So I hope Lovitz is back, but there's questions in the defense, and there's definite questions in the striker position.
Yeah, and we can't have Lovitz leave until he scores a goal off his head.
Lovitz in the air. Okay. He actually scored a goal this year, which is his first professional goal. So good job, Daniel Lovitz.
There you go. All right, yeah, well, this one, you know, because we are trying to break down three full teams here, might be a little bit longer than normal, but let's move to Vancouver, Kevin. Kevin and I came together to get the Vancouver answers. In the coming days, probably when there's a bit of a lull in the playoff schedule, we'll probably bring Simon on or someone from Vancouver that has a more insider look at it, but certainly from our insider-outsider perspective, we came together for this. So the low point of the season we agreed on is what I'm going to call, forgive me for this in advance, the 420 stoning, which is on April 20th of this past year, Vancouver lost 6-0 to SKC, and it was a sign of problems within that Whitecaps organization. I rewatched the highlights just before this show to remind myself of just how much of a disaster that game was. Vancouver went down to 9 men with a double red card that came off a VAR decision. And that's maybe a topic that I'm sick of talking about, but it was kind of a ticky-tacky VAR decision. But the point is, it's 3-0 at that point anyway. They weren't playing well. They completely capitulated once they went down to 9 men, and you don't like to see that. And to lose 6-0 to any team, especially a rival that you're supposed to be competing against at the top, it's howling, and it should have been a good indication. And the other thing, too, is they lost to Kansas City 4-1 in the reverse fixture. So 10-1 against the top team in the West. Kind of says a lot about where the Whitecaps stand right now, don't you think?
Yeah, and Whitecaps were supposed to be a contender at the beginning of the season. We're like, okay, they're supposed to be maybe top four in the West. That was the predictions of a lot of people. And it did not happen. Not even close to it. They finished 7th because of how some teams behind them were terrible, too. Actually, they finished 8th. Galaxy finished 7th. So, yeah, that's that's a good and fair low point for me. And that's when we realized that, yeah, it's going to be the last year of Davies, and they're going to waste that year. If they're not going to give Davies a trophy, and Davies is going to leave on a high note, scoring 2 goals in his last game, but no trophies and no winning mentality and no winning memories for the Fons.
And I'm sure that Whitecaps fans would point to the 5-2 loss to TFC as not being particularly up there either. There was a couple... This was a team, and I remember watching that Voyageurs Cup game in person, obviously, so I have greater memories of it, and just the lack of drive that the Whitecaps had. And part of that was down to tactics, and they were only really able to play that hyper defense and pounce kind of style that Carl Robinson prefers, very direct kind of. But there was more to it than that. That was just a team that just didn't seem to have a fight, didn't seem to realize that they were chasing a cup final that day. And I think that it's all, you know, that combined with the fact that you capitulate when you go down to 9 men, you don't want to give up 6 goals in a game, you know, 3 more after you go down to the 2 men. And you can feel aggrieved, absolutely, for having a double red card there. That was overkill from the VAR booth for sure. But, you know, there was a little tap to the face for one of the red cards. I hate that so much when they do that. But nonetheless, it just was a bad sign of the spirit in that team. And that sort of speaks to a lot of it, which leads to, Kevin, the highlight of the season. And this is kind of telling, too. The highlight that we agreed on was, you know, Bayern Munich sweeping into town and giving them a whole bunch of money.
Yeah, it is. Like, yeah, one of your players is worth 20 million euros. Okay, yay. We're losing him. Oh, wait. But congratulations, kid.
And it framed the rest of their season. The entire narrative around Vancouver this year is about Alphonso Davies going to Bayern Munich. That's not ideal from a pure Whitecaps perspective, because it's framing your team and judging your team based on perceived value of a player to someone else and knowing that that player is leaving at the end of the year. So there was this long sort of march towards the end. And hell, the kid went out with a bang yesterday. Two goals
made with work rate, too. His first goal is just like passes defenders, sees an opportunity, shoots near post and gets it in. Second goal is just soccer IQ goal where he's there where he needs to be, close to the box, and he sees a defender overtouch the ball by like a foot. Like, well, I'm closer now. I'm taking the ball, and I'm scoring with it.
Yeah, and, you know, the Alphonso cam at the end of it was crazy. I don't know if you were watching the TSN coverage. They just followed him around the field for about 10 minutes. It was getting a little creepy at the end. And then they gave him a nice interview, and, you know, that's their story. And it's just, if you're a pure Whitecaps fan, obviously from Canadian soccer perspective, it's great that Alphonso Davies broke through and got to Bayern Munich. It is a wonderful story. When we do our year end, I suspect it will be right up there with our highlights of the year when we break that down, however we decide to do so. But from a Whitecaps only perspective, it is less than ideal that this is your top story, but I really think it is, which clearly leads to our MVP. And who else is it going to be?
The fact else, that we're not really even talking about the Robo out situation, you know, it's telling too.
Yeah, look, Davies was a full measure for what he did this year, and he got better as the year got better, which is a good sign for his time in Bayern Munich. And, you know, I suspect that we'll be on the Alphonso watch the third week of January. We'll all be glued to our screens hoping that he gets on the bench and gets on the field for Bayern Munich, and that's going to be a lot of our talk in the wintertime leading into MLS season next year, is just watching to see what happens to Davies. Does he play? Does he not? This is going to be a continued story for a long time now, but he is, I think, to me, he defined the Whitecaps season. He is their most valuable player. He is their narrative. He is their season in a nutshell. That this is the season of Alphonso and not much else in Vancouver, Kevin.
Yep, so Alphonso Davies was the MVP for us. And the LVP, the least valuable player, Man Bun Brekshe.
Yeah. Look, I don't. It's not so much. Brekshe has moments. He has talent.
Yeah, but he's being asked to do something he's not supposed to. So he's not put in a win-win situation. He's being put in a situation that his flaws are going to get exposed, and they have been for a few years now.
He always seems to me like a guy that would rather be at a Kid Rock show than on the pitch.
Yeah. Or that 420, that 420 day you talked about, maybe it's more 420 now. Like,
And look, American listeners out there, Brekshe is an enigma and a frustrated one at that, because this is a guy that has such a much talent. I remember watching him 2012 back then for Dallas, and he was a forward then, and you know, he was considered to be part of that next generation of great American players. It was going to come up and take the U.S. to the next level, and of course that fell flat pretty quickly. And you know, we talked about Anthony Jackson Hamel a minute ago. In some ways, Breck Shea might be a similar kind of player. He's got that big body. He's a very large player, and I think that that helps, allows him to float a little bit too. And he will be an MLS lifer because someone's always going to be willing to put Breck Shea on there because the talent is going to blind people. But when you look at his salary and you look at his production and you look at his fit in Vancouver, you know, he might become an Ameriquois too. He might be moving somewhere else soon enough and kind of just poke around because everyone's always going to be dazzled by the potential of Shea, but not necessarily impressed by the reality of him, Kevin, which leads us to what Vancouver needs to do in the offseason. And I hate to continue the trend.
Blow
they need
it
to
up.
Spend their Alfonso money well.
Yeah. Take a piece of paper, make sure all the names of the entire teams are on it, and just shred it. Who comes back? I have no idea. But with the money you're going to make now, you need a plan. You can't just buy a few players here and there and hope they work well together. When were Vancouver really successful? When they have Bolaños, when they had a few players that were pushing in the same directions tactically and technically and had a bit of the same type of way to play, an identity of play that was similar and was carrying the rest of the team. From Felipe to Breck Shea to Kai Kamara, this seems like a car with mismatched pieces that you're trying to make sure that doesn't fall off the road and in pieces when it goes higher than 100 kilometers an hour. You need to make sure the pieces fit together. And that's what you need to do.
That's 55 miles per hour for our American listeners. Look, they need to get their front office right. They need to figure that out. They need to make sure they're all going in the same direction, and they need to spend their Davies money correctly. There is a rebuild coming in Vancouver. You don't need 5 years or 3 years or 2 years even to rebuild an MLS, even to this day. Well, Christ, expansion teams can do it overnight.
Some teams haven't figured it out in like ages, San Jose, Houston. But some others just come into the league like, yep, okay, well, we're going to be contenders right now.
Yeah, so that's going to be a big part of the question heading into next year. Very curious to see how Cincinnati does next year because they do have an established team that's doing pretty well in the USL. But
doing pretty well until they got eliminated by the Red Bulls. So exactly,
yes, the Red Bulls too. You talk about the model of MLS in 3.0. There's two models, and the Red Bulls are the pinnacle of one. But that's a conversation for tomorrow. All right, shall we move to the enigma of all enigmas,
Toronto
FC's 2018 season?
Let's move to Toronto FC. All right, they're the highest point. CCL final?
I would go Tigres, beating Tigres.
Okay,
it's
so
the CCL run in general.
The semifinal, yeah. No, Tigres was the quarterfinal, sorry. So beating Tigres in the quarterfinal,
Yeah, the game after Colorado. So, yeah, that was unexpected, to say the least. I would also say Josie scoring to win the game in Chivas, to win a game in Mexico when they had it up against them, their comeback from that. I mean, this is why it's so strange to evaluate TFC season, because you look at the MLS play, particularly through the middle, and you just go, you throw your arms up and go, what happened? Like, what happened? But then you remember that it was the same season connected to them beating teams like Tigres, beating Club America in a two-game series. Like, how can that be the same team? And it's infuriating, and it also makes it very difficult to handicap for my final question that we'll answer today, what they do in the offseason, because you look at this, and you look at the team I'll mention the Atlanta game briefly right now. We'll talk more about the Atlanta game tomorrow as I evaluate Atlanta in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But how can a team that played so poorly go put a beating on Atlanta, which has been the best team in the league most of the year, right? Like, this is TFC in a nutshell. So, yeah, the highlight, though, is that CCL run. And in particular, I think, would be beating Tigres, who is maybe the best team I've ever seen live.
Yeah, they were pretty damn good. They were. I remember Club America in 2015, and I was like, oh, okay, well, we're talking about another level here. And maybe Tigres gave you the same feelings.
They did. And look, the first leg, I remember Jonathan Rosario scoring. I'll give you an exact moment. It was Jonathan Rosario scoring that little flick heel in the first leg at BMO Field against Tigres. That was the moment that I think every TFC fan went, oh my God, they could win this thing because they are competing head to head with this team. And I didn't believe it up to that point. I thought they were going to have their ass handed to them that day. And then I walked in that stadium and the press box, I was in the press box that game. It is very rare in Toronto for a press box to cheer. And they weren't really cheering in the way that a fan would, but it erupted.
They were just
gasping.
They were just like, oh.
Wow, what a goal. And it was just so surprised. And you know, there are people in that press box that I've known for years. Hi, Rudy. That I know are fans deep down that suppress that for what they do now. But in that moment, for those brief seconds, we're fans again, watching something that we loved and watching a team that we, you know, at least at one point were, you know, deeply passionate about. And you know, in my case, I don't hide the fact that I still want them to win. I'm not going to be dancing naked in the streets anymore. That's
which is good for everyone. Like, thank you for that. We thank you very much for that.
It's a win-win, really, in many, many ways. So, yeah, that's the highlight. With the low light, Kevin, and this is a tough one to narrow it down. In some ways, I would say losing 2-1 to Vancouver to eliminate themselves from the playoffs, in many ways, is a literal low life because up until that moment, I swear to God, I still thought they were going to figure a way in because the talent was so there.
Yeah.
Until that bang-bang, two results went the wrong way within a half hour of each other, and suddenly it was just finally over. So, in some ways, it's that. But I'm going to go back further, and I've been rallying on this for most of the season. It was the decision of Greg Vanney to throw 6 points in the toilet against Colorado and Houston on the road. Back when they were still on good form and they still were relatively healthy, they could have at least got a couple points out of that, and that wouldn't have made the difference based on what the playoffs were if they'd gotten two draws in there. True. But if they'd gotten two wins, yeah, it would have.
It would have made a difference between the insurmountable obstacle and the, okay, we just need to get ourselves in check and we should be fine. You know, 6 points makes a big difference in Major League Soccer. 6 points, the Montreal Impact finishes fourth.
Exactly. And that's when I look at that, I look at that decision. And then you're chasing your tail when you get behind the eight ball, too, right? And I think that exasperates itself. So to me, that's the low point, was the decision, that decision that was made to completely prioritize CCL to the point of throwing the MLS season in the toilet. And I think that the club itself learned a lesson from that they will take into next year when they are back in the CCL, obviously, and they still, I think, are going to be basically the same team. We'll address that with the final question here. But I think that they learned a lesson and they won't completely throw those points away this time because, you know, was it hubris? Maybe. Maybe they thought that they could just – I remember we had Rudy on in April, and we were joking, is TFC a club in crisis? And we were, ha, ha, ha. Well, it turned out they were.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, Dwayne, the MVP of Toronto FC for 2018. And this one, go ahead.
This one wasn't hard. This was the easiest one. It's Jonathan Rosario.
Canadian kid. Two Canadian MVP. Actually, three, Dwayne. The three Canadian team's most valuable player in 2018. All Canadians.
And this one I don't think is debatable.
True. I mean, well, Fonzie either. It's just basically Montreal, if you'd say Piatti or Piet. But just, yeah. Anyways, Ozario.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say, look, it was such a shock that he came out. I mean, this is a guy that you know, if TFC had played better, you might even have him in a conversation for, I don't think he's there, but I don't. You'd have to start putting him in a best 11 type conversations based on the season that he had. He was a remarkable breakthrough, and it's something that was one shining highlight through the summer, was watching Ozario just score goal after goal and figuring out how to play that combined role. And then you're looking at the talent around him on the national team now and thinking, my God, he could play that eight kind of role for them. Jeez.
We're going to win the World Cup.
Let's settle with make. Let's go make.
Okay, fine. We'll get to the hacks.
Yeah. It's a great season for Jonathan Rosario, and he was really a shining light in you know, a bleak season in many, many ways. But, you know, again, and when we're evaluating what to do next year, you look at his play and, hell, even look at Delgado finally figuring himself out yesterday a little bit, and Jansen getting a couple goals yesterday, and you start to get hope again for 2019. But it's you know, it's four months until then, and that's a good thing for TFC, because I got to tell you, I'll tell you what I watched.
You tweeted something about the amount of games they played. 92 games in like 920 days.
So I'd forgotten the 1 year of Voyager's Cup. So it was actually over 100.
Oh, geez.
And they averaged, including the off season, they were averaging a game every 9 days for the last basically almost 3 years. Right. That's a lot. And you can't. I mean, you can say excuses, and so on and so forth. And, you know, an excuse and a reason are very similar, right? So the rest is badly needed. And they shut Josie down, and they shut Moore down. And I don't know whether Moore's ever going to come back or not. He missed 25 games this year. Mavinga missed 18 games or something like that. Oro, which was one of their big offseason signings, missed 12 games. I mean, this was a team that was beat up all year, particularly at the back. And they couldn't defend this year. And it makes sense when you look at, you know, what was TFC in their championship season was a very good defensive team. They were a better offensive team, but they were a very good, like top five in the league defensive team. And the big reason was they had a consistent pairing of Mavinga and Moore in the middle that just kept things together. And then you were able to sort of spell those off with a little bit of Zavaleta and a little bit of Hagelin. And then, you know, we saw yesterday in that Atlanta game, I don't know how closely you were watching it, Kevin, when Hagelin made one bonehead play after another in the first half and almost let Atlanta, you know, almost handed the shield to Atlanta himself after TFC was cruising, how those players cannot be features. They've got to be supporters, not features. And I think they're fine as supporting pieces, but when you have to lean on them as much as TFC did this year, well, look at their goals against, and there's your answer.
All right, so who's the least valuable player for TFC? And are you going to go with Bono?
I know that people are going to accuse me of a bias here, and perhaps there is. But, I mean, let me argue. Yes, Bono is my least valuable player.
Yes, it's Bono. Well, he cost you like 12 points this year, at least.
Direct goalkeeping errors both knocked off at a minimum 5 points. We're talking like
– and in the CCL final. Errors. Like in the CCL final, it's on Bono. Anyways.
They win the CCL final. Bono reads the wind, right? And I mean, you're a keeper, you can't do that. And whether he has the potential to be better, and a lot of people disagree with me in Toronto on my evaluation of Bono, I think they need to upgrade on him. But that's my position. I've never been fond of him since the day they drafted him. Not as a person, things like that. I'm sure he's a lovely guy, but that's just his play. I think that people are blinded by his athleticism and they're not necessarily seeing his decision making. And I prefer Irwin to him, and I would prefer they upgrade both in the offseason. And I think that that's got to be a priority for them. It's one of, not their biggest priority. The biggest priority I'll get to in a minute, but it's something that should be considered if the option is there. Particularly if they can get some value from him in terms of trade in MLS, and I do think he has value in that way. But again, if you just break this down on a purely logical level, they win the CCL if he catches a ball that was shot from the damn sideline from 40 yards away. That's a mistake that's not forgivable at a professional level. And he also gave up balls through his hand. He gave up bad rebounds. He coughed up point after point. If you want to be jokey about the least valuable player, let's call it the training staff because of the amount of injuries. But yeah, I got to stay on my – I got to stay on narrative here. I got to stay on brand. It's Bono to me, and it is who it is.
Hashtag he hates Bono.
All right, so what they need to do in the offseason. This is maybe the most difficult of the three teams, I think, in terms of deciding. I mean, Montreal has pretty clear needed to upgrade on the offensive side of things. Vancouver has to overhaul and has to figure the front office off. That's obvious. I think with TFC, it's to figure out a couple things. It's to figure out exactly what they are. Whether this was an outlier based on bad luck and injuries or whether this was the beginning of a downturn. And they need to have a very critical and a very honest evaluation with themselves to figure that out. If they believe it was the latter, then maybe they need to take a step back and make some tough decisions quickly, because teams that wait to make those tough decisions get stuck in spirals that they can't pull themselves out of and get stuck, you know, looking at the highlights on YouTube of the Championship of the Glory Days, right? They can't be looking at Glory Day highlights anymore.
Like the Galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I mean, look, that's a big thing. They've got to make that evaluation. But I mean, in terms of my belief is that this is a bit of an outlier season, particularly with the CCL in front of them again, with another year of Giovinco that they can control him on. I think that what they need to do is they need to make an upgrade in the center of defense that is possibly leading, making sure Drew Moore's healthy. If Drew Moore's healthy, then I think you look at him as your third option. You get rid of one of Haglund or Zavaleta. You keep the other one, whichever one you choose. I don't care. They're kind of the same. So you pick one of those two guys. And
well, you know who they're going to keep. Like, no offense, but there's a nephew in there, and there's a non-nephew. So, Haglund, nice to see you.
He's also from Cincinnati. Haglund is too, so they might be able to get some value.
There you go. FCC, FCC. You want some? You want some Haggy? Come on, come and get him.
So yeah, you sign a top line center half that is going to stand beside Mavinga, who I think is capable of being amongst the best center halves in the league. And then you use Bohr as your third option off the bench. He is a veteran guy that will still have some value. They do have to re-sign him. His contract was only for 1 year. So that's maybe the first choice is how healthy he is. And if they don't feel he's ready to come back, then yeah, they have to part company. And it means they might need two more center halves at that point. That's the focus. You look at the defensive record, and you have to make a decision on how you're going to make that better next year, because you cannot allow 69 goals or whatever the hell it was. I don't have it in front of me, and expect to do anything in this league. And they need to fix that. And they know they need to fix that. And that also goes all the way to the back, because the keeper is part of the defensive back line. And I know there's a lot of people in Toronto, not to belabor this, that want to say Bono's struggles this year were based on the fact that the guys in front of him weren't as good. Perhaps. But maybe the struggles of the guys in front of them were based on the fact that Bono wasn't as good too. There's a catch 22 there. It goes both ways. So that's what they need to do. And I think that the other thing TFC, and I'll finish with this one, Kevin, is because it has been a long one now. They need to make quick decisions in about April next year too. If they're out of the Champions League, they can be. They get a bad draw. They could be out. I think they probably get. You know, they could. They're probably going to draw SKC. If you look at how the draw works, and the fact they can't play American teams can't play American teams other than the two MLS matchup, Canadian to American. So that means it's highly likely that SKC is the draw, and that's not going to be easy. If they're out in the first round of the CCL, that's probably good for their MLS season, but maybe it means that this year was not as much of an outlier as TFC fans would like, and maybe they need to make some decisions quick. Maybe in the summer window, they let Javinko go if he's not going to re-sign, and that's going to cause a lot of problems, attendance and otherwise, in the stadium, but long-term, it might be the right choice if they're not still a championship-contending team. They have to make those decisions within the next 6 months. And that's my final thought on TFC 2018, and we'll turn our attention, Kevin, moving forward to the teams that are actually in the playoffs.
Tomorrow's our MLS Cup 2018 playoff preview. We'll talk about the matchups, we'll talk about our favorites, and we'll update our predictions from the beginning of the season. Until then, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and we'll be back for another edition of The World of Football with a Soccer Perspective tomorrow. Until then, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.